Not even a carp.
In the spring of 1960, when I was 6 years old, we went to one of our favorite spots on the Platte River. The water in the Platte was usually pretty clear, and normally you could see the bottom. But on this day, the water was cloudy, yellowish brown. I was mad because we didn't even catch a carp that day. Dad explained to me that it must have rained somewhere upstream and that soil had washed into the river. On the way home, Dad pointed to the rills and small gullies in the bare farm fields of eastern Nebraska that were ready to plant. Dad said that those gullies were caused by erosion and that when it rained, soil was washing off the fields and into the river. I noticed that the color of the soil in the fields was the same yellowish brown color that the water in the river had been that day. I decided I didn't like erosion very much because it ruined the fishing. Years later, as a teenager in the 1970s, I ended up at Iowa State University studying biology. I wanted to be a wildlife biologist and work in fisheries management, but I soon found out that there were a lot of other people that wanted to be wildlife biologists, and there weren't many jobs. That was pretty discouraging. Later, I happened to get a part-time job working for some USDA scientists on campus that were studying erosion and water conservation. This turned out to be a great job for me because I enjoyed working outside and I spent my time taking soil samples, plant samples, and helping with the field work. The scientists I worked for explained to me that over 80% of the land area in Iowa is farmland and that the water quality in Iowa's streams is pretty much determined by how farmland is managed. So I thought that maybe if I kept working with this group and going to school for just a few more years, I could possibly get a job working in ag research to improve water quality. Well, a few more years turned into 8 more years, and eventually I was hired as a scientist in 1981. In the 80s, our research group worked mostly on erosion and no-till. In the mid-80s, construction started on our new lab on the Iowa State campus. The lab was originally called the Soil Tilth Lab, and it opened in 1989. Soon after the opening, we had a big meeting with people from across the Midwest to discuss the kind of research the lab should be working on. One of the speakers was Jim Ann from Iowa NRCS. Jim said that Iowa farmers were not going to be able to grow soybeans in some fields because of the new erosion limits in the 1985 Farm Bill. He told us that somebody at the lab should work on cover crops to reduce erosion after soybeans. The erosion limits that Jim mentioned were later scaled back by Congress, but that really didn't solve the problem. Later that year, I attended a field day at Dick Thompson's farm near Boone, Iowa. Dick was one of the founding members of Practical Farmers of Iowa, and Dick showed me that farmers could grow cover crops with corn and soybeans in Iowa. So with that encouragement, I applied for and obtained some funding from the Leopold Center at Iowa State and began my first cover crop research project in the summer of 1990. My initial work with cover crops mainly revolved around learning how to plant, grow, and terminate cover crops in a corn and soybean rotation. But in farming or science, you sometimes learn things by accident. For example, 1 year we had a winter rye cover crop growing in the far corner of a farmer's harvested cornfield. In late October, the farmer and I were looking at the rye, and it was growing up really thick and dark green. At this point, the farmer casually mentions to me that he was going to put a few head of cattle out in the field to pick up dropped corn. He told me, "The cattle won't bother the cover crops way over here because the water tank is in the other corner of the field, almost a mile away." I came back several weeks later to measure how much the rye had grown. I walked out into the field carrying all my equipment, and as I got closer to the corner of the field, I couldn't see the rye. It was gone. The cattle had grazed it to the ground. At first I was mad, but then I had to laugh. I realized I had discovered something by accident. I had discovered that cattle really love to eat rye cover crops. This was probably not a big surprise to most farmers, and today, many farmers in Iowa use winter rye cover crops to increase grazing acres while still growing corn and soybeans. After our initial experiments showed us that we could reliably grow cover crops as long as we kept cattle away from them, we decided to see if cover crops reduced erosion. To do this, we planted winter rye in strips on a sloping field in the fall after no-till soybeans. We also left some strips without cover crops. The cover crops grew really well, and the following April, we went out to this field to make erosion measurements. Because you can never count on it to rain when you want it to, we hauled water tanks and pumps out to the field to make artificial rain. We dug pits at the bottom of the slope to collect runoff and sediment. Naturally, it was cold and windy that week while we were raining. Even wearing rain suits, we were getting cold, wet, and muddy. But I was really excited because I could see right away that the water coming off the strips with the dark green rye cover crops was clean and clear. It looked like you could drink it. At the same time, the water coming off the no-till strips without cover crops was cloudy, brown, and definitely not drinkable. That brown water reminded me of the water in the Platte River after a spring rain. Our measurements confirmed what we could see with our eyes. The rye cover crop reduced erosion to about 1 ton per acre per year. That still sounds like a lot, but it is way less than the Iowa average erosion rate of 5.7 tons per acre per year. This means that over 35 years, a cover crop and no-till could save an estimated 1 inch of topsoil, prevent 2 bushel per acre decrease in average corn yields, and save $665 in crop and fertilizer losses. It also means that with cover crops and no-till, farmers could grow soybeans on hilly ground without too much erosion. Later, in the mid-90s, there were growing concerns in Iowa and the Midwest about nitrate contamination of water. First, there was concern about nitrate in farm wells, then nitrate in municipal water supplies, and later, nitrate in the Mississippi River and the Gulf of Mexico. I had read about research in the Chesapeake Bay area that had shown that rye cover crops could reduce seepage of nitrate into the bay. So we decided to try the same thing in Iowa. In 1999, scientists at my lab set up a field study with 24 small fields that each had their own separate drainage tile so that we could collect, measure, analyze all the drainage water coming from each of those fields for nitrate. Some of those small fields had a corn-soybean rotation with no-till and a winter rye cover crop every year. In the 19 years since this field setup became operational, the winter rye cover crop has reduced the amount of nitrate lost in tile drainage by an average of 57%, or by about 20 pounds of nitrogen per acre per year. This means that 20 pounds of nitrogen was recycled back into the soil every year and didn't end up in our drinking water or the Gulf of Mexico. We also learned that a lot of the nitrate in the drainage water was coming from the soil and not directly from the nitrogen fertilizer applied to corn. We concluded that the biggest factor in reducing nitrate losses was having the green living cover crop plants growing and taking up nitrogen during the late fall, winter, and early spring, when normally nothing is growing in our fields. The last piece of the cover crop puzzle fell into place after we had cover crops growing in some of our fields for a number of years. We could go to a cover crop field and dig up a shovel full of soil and see that it was filled with roots and wormholes. It had a rich, moist, earthy smell. You could feel the soil crumble in your hands, and you could see that the soil was alive and moving with worms and other small organisms. Some people call this soil health, but whatever you call it, we could see, feel, and smell the difference. After 10 years, we could measure more soil organic matter, more worms, more soil nitrogen, more water storage capacity, more rain infiltration, and more soil life. Sometimes this better soil lets us get into the field sooner after a rain because it drains faster and doesn't pond as much. Better, healthier soil also helps corn or soybeans withstand our crazy Iowa weather, the big 4-inch rains, the wet springs, and the 6-week dry spells in the summer. The conclusion I came to from all this research is that cover crops work because they keep green living plants out in corn and soybean fields during the brown months between harvest and planting. I believe that cover crops are worth the time and money because they are a long-term investment in improving and protecting our soils and water for our children and grandchildren. And the exciting thing is, we have barely scratched the surface of the potential of cover crops. For example, there has been almost no plant breeding or selection done to improve cover crops, and the potential for better cover crops is huge. I believe that cover crops can keep our fields green and our water clean, but does anyone else believe that? When you work on ag research, you often get asked to talk to farmers at field days and winter meetings. At first, I was not really very comfortable doing that. I was way more comfortable talking to other scientists about data and experiments. I didn't know if farmers would want to hear about cover crops from someone who grew up in Omaha. But it turned out to be okay. Most farmers are generally interested in hearing about how they can protect and improve their land. Over the years, I've heard farmers make comments like, "I have to use cover crops because I can't stand seeing the erosion on my hills. My farm has some of the poorest soils in the county, and I want to make them better. I just like seeing the green out there in the winter and the spring. It's the right thing to do." Finally, the best indication that farmers are beginning to believe in cover crops is the dramatic increase in cover crop acres in Iowa. In 1990, there were almost no cover crops in Iowa, and in 2019, there were almost 1 million acres. That's tremendous progress. Unfortunately, that still leaves 23 million acres of corn and soybeans without cover crops. At our current rate of adoption, it will take us another 600 years to protect the rest of those acres with cover crops. Hopefully, it won't take that long. In any case, that's how a love of fishing led me to work on cover crops. And maybe someday when we go fishing with our great-grandchildren, the water won't turn cloudy when it rains upstream.
This story was written by Tom Casper with the help of Tina Bakehouse. Tom was a plant physiologist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, but now he is retired. Tina is a communication educator, executive coach, storyteller, and creative. Blue Dot Sessions provided all of the music for this episode. This podcast is part two of a three-part series titled Consider the Soil. The series was created and produced by me, Dina Nichols, with support from a North Central Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education graduate student grant, and of course, the Practical Farmers of Iowa.